radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you again, Dave, and welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, it's Mystery Playhouse and Lady in the Morgue with special guest host Peter Lorre. But first, we'll go on a dangerous assignment. Dangerous Assignment aired over NBC from February of 1950 through July of 1953 with movie star Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell, a globe-trotting government troubleshooter. The series was produced and directed by Bill Karn, director of radio's prestigious Screen Directors Playhouse, who also supervised Dunleavy's Dangerous Assignment syndicated television series. From 1950, it's Dangerous Assignment, When a Friend is Not a Friend. Starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell, Herb Butterfield as the Commissioner and Dr. Cornwall, and Betty Moran as Ruth. Steve is sent to an Eastern European country to prevent the murder of the only person who can unify the nation's opposing factions. So then, from 1950, it's Dangerous Assignment, When a Friend is Not a Friend. Another classic program from the vintage days of radio, presented here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Dunleavy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to have me asking, when is a friend not a friend? Answer, when he's tickling your ribs with a gun.
Well, here he is, Commissioner.
Thanks, Ruth. Morning, Steve.
Commissioner?
I suppose I fooled you right out of a big deal as usual.
No, this time it was strictly business. I was getting caught up on my paperwork.
What?
Honest, I was bringing my files up to date.
Yeah? How many telephone numbers make up a file?
That's what I thought.
I have your papers at my desk when you're ready, Steve.
Thanks, Rose. Well, what's the deal, Commissioner?
Take a look at this map of Eastern Europe, Steve. This country right here.
What about it?
Politically, it's being torn apart. There are two major parties at odds with each other and a well-organized minority who'd like to keep them at odds.
Pretty familiar pattern.
Yes, it is. But right now, it's vital to Western Europe and to us that this particular country be united into a democratic form of government. And there's only one man who can unite that country.
Don't tell me it's me.
No. Dr. Corvell.
Dr. Corvell? But he's no politician.
That's the point, Steve. Dr. Corvell has no political affiliations. He's that country's leading citizen, a scholar, a scientist, a man of stature.
Yeah, he could be just the man for the job.
As you know, he's been living in this country since the war, but now he feels it's time to return to his own country. There's to be a vital meeting of the legislature over there in 3 days, a meeting that could determine which way the country goes. If Covell could pop up at that meeting, it might turn the trick.
So what do you want me to do, escort the good doctor over there?
He's already left.
What?
Yeah, the day before yesterday.
Well, then I don't get it. Why call me on the deal? What more is to be done?
I'm telling you that, Steve. Dr. Covell realized that the organized minority would try at all costs to prevent him from reaching his destination. So he's traveling incognito. Plans to reach and enter his country secretly.
But I still don't see...
His plan was to go directly to the house of a friend in the capital of his country. This morning we found out that this so-called friend is actually a member of the minority.
What?
Yes, it's a death trap for Dr. Covell. Now, Steve, you've got to intercept Covell before he reaches that man's house.
Brother, have you any idea where Covell is now?
We know only that he was planning to contact a person named Dravik in the town of Rizma, across the border from his country. Now, Steve, get over to Rizma. Try to find Dravik. And above all, get to Covell before the opposition does. And remember, from now on, every minute counts double. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Just a simple matter of getting to Dr. Covell before the opposition does, and incidentally, trying to keep the opposition from getting to me. A real cinch. Well, it's Tuesday when I get to Rizma. I've got to find Dravik in a hurry, but I haven't any idea where he is. There's only one hotel in town, so I check in, and then I ask the desk clerk about Dravik. He says he's never even heard the name, but he does remember a distinguished-looking man with white hair staying at the hotel overnight a couple of days ago. Probably Dr. Covell. I turn away from the desk and start across the lobby, and then I spot a very familiar face. It's a foreign agent named Marzak. I've tangled with him plenty in the past, and I've no desire to renew the acquaintance now, so I start to duck into the bar, but he sidles in front of me.
Well, my old and dear friend, Mr. Mitchell.
Hello, Marzak.
My, such a cold greeting to give to a man who possesses such admiration for you. After all the times we have been together in the past, Mitchell, even though on opposite sides of the fence, I should think that you might be a little more cordial.
Look, you mind getting out of my way?
The man is in a hurry. Such a pity, such a pity. I thought perhaps we might find a quiet corner and talk over old times together.
I said get out of my way.
But what destination could possibly be so important that you could not spare a few minutes for an old, let us say, colleague?
I'm going into the bar, if that's okay with you, Marzak.
Splendid. Thank you for your invitation. I accept with pleasure. Some drinks, much talk, a perfect way to spend an evening.
Look, for the last time, I didn't invite you. I'm drinking alone, and if you don't...
Drinking alone? What a barbarous custom. But then I suppose it is to a certain extent fitting that a man should have a farewell drink in solitude.
Farewell drink?
Yes. I understand you do not like this town of Rizma. I cannot say that I blame you.
Oh?
I understand further that there is a train leaving here in half an hour and that you plan to be on it. So I decided to help you by reserving a compartment for you.
Now, that's real sweet of you, Marzak.
Ah.
But what if I decide I like it here?
In that case, I understand it is quite possible you may remain here permanently.
You're quite an understanding guy, aren't you?
Yes, and I believe you are also. Goodbye, Mr. Mitchell. Come again when you cannot stay so long, and please extend my very best regards to your commissioner.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon, sir.
What?
I overheard you ask the desk clerk a few minutes ago about a distinguished-looking man with white hair.
What about it?
I believe you are referring to Dr. Corvair.
Was I? Who are you?
Bisco, a friend of the doctor's. And I am worried about him.
What do you mean?
His return is the one thing which can unite our country. But I feel he is in great danger. You see, he plans to go to the house of a friend of his in our capital. I now have reason to believe that friend intends to betray the doctor.
I see. Yeah, let's go here right.
That is why I crossed the border to Rizma here, to try to intercept the doctor and warn him. But I was too late. He has already left.
Yeah. You ever hear of a guy named Dravik?
Dravik, no. Mitchell, the situation is very serious. We must find Dr. Corvair.
First, I've got to find Dravik. I can't get very far doing that with that character Marzak on my tail.
Yes, I saw Marzak talking to you. I know all about Marzak. He is a dangerous man.
He just invited me to leave town. If there were only some way I could shake him, might give me time enough to locate this Dravik.
Wait. I think I have an idea.
What is it, Bisco?
See, Marzak is across the lobby watching us. He undoubtedly knows you have orders to find Corvell. And also, undoubtedly, Marzak has orders to stop you.
So?
So if we were to conclude our conversation and I were to slip furtively out the side door and get into my car, Marzak might assume I had information concerning Dr. Corvell.
Yeah, he'd probably follow you, all right.
I will make sure he follows me a long way. Long enough to take him off your trail for an hour or two.
Okay, Fisco, it's worth a try. Go ahead. Fisco slips out the side door and Marzak starts after him. So far, so good. But I still don't have any leads on Dravik. I head for the bar to figure it out and where to start. And pretty soon a girl eases over to my table.
Hello.
Hi.
I am sorry. Are you lonely?
No, I'm Steve. But sit down anyway.
Oh, thank you.
You want me to buy you a drink, I suppose.
My cigarette will do for the moment.
Well, that's a switch. Here.
Thank you.
Waiter,
the nice one. Very good. Look, Sari, this is all very pleasant, but as far as making an evening of it, I've unfortunately got something else on my mind right now.
I know.
Huh?
You're looking for Dalek.
What? Yeah, I am. Do you know him?
Oh, yes, I'm quite a good friend of Dalek's.
Where is he?
First, let me ask you, why do you wish to see Dalek?
Well, that's something I'll talk to Dravik about.
I see. Well, Dravik is not interested so much in people's motives. Dravik is most of all interested in knowing whether there is money in it.
Okay, you can tell him there's dough in it for him.
How much?
Plenty.
Very well.
You'll take me to him?
No, that is not possible.
What? You mean we've just been making idle conversation?
I would not call it that.
Why can't you take me to him?
Because Dravik is not a him.
Not a... You're Dravik?
Yes. Sorry, Dravik.
Well, what do you know? So I break my back trying to find you, and it ends up with you finding me.
Yes, and I would say it is quite divine.
Oh?
But I still would like to know why you wish to find me.
Well, first, let me ask you, how do you fit in this deal with Dr. Corvell?
Deal? Dr. Corvell? I'm not sure what you mean. Oh, unless it has something to do with my rat line?
Your what?
No, that is what they call it, the rat line. You see, Stephen, there are many people in countries behind this, what you call, iron curtain, who wish to be elsewhere. So, for a considerable price, I smuggle them out.
I see. Does your rat line ever run in reverse, Sari?
You too.
What do you mean, me too?
Most people are breaking their backs trying to escape to the West these days. And now twice in 2 days I find men who wish to go east. I think everybody's suddenly crazy.
Wait a minute. This other man who wanted to go east, was he a tall fellow, distinguished looking, with white hair?
Oh, that is the man.
Dr. Corvell, all right.
He told me he wanted to go to the capital city of the country to the east of here, and he was willing to pay a great amount of money. So I, as you say, reversed my rat line. I took him across the border just before dawn.
Look, Sari, I've got to catch up to him. He's going to collect a bullet if I don't.
I see. Well, there is always the chance you will collect a bullet along the way. But for you...
And for money.
The two most convincing arguments I can think of. Very well, we will try to catch up with this Dr. Corvell. Here is an address. You meet me on the corner in front of this place in 2 hours. We will start then.
I head back to my hotel. Then, as I open the door to my room, I see I've got company. There's a local cop on one side of my room, and on the other is a woman I've never seen before. But right now, she's acting like we were long-lost enemies.
There he is, officer.
Huh?
That is the one. I insist you arrest him at once.
Hey, what is this?
This woman claims you stole her jewels.
Stole her jewels? Now,
I am positive of it, officer. This man is Hugo Brisak, the notorious gem thief.
Hugo Schmugo, I'm Steve Mitchell from the United States, officer, and if you'd care to look at my credentials...
You see, officer. As I told you, this thief frequently poses as an American agent.
I'm afraid you'll have to come with me.
But this woman's mistaken, I...
Unfortunately, I found her jewels in your suitcase.
What?
So you must come with me.
Wait, I get it now. Anything to delay me, huh? Look, lady, I don't know who you are, but I sure know whom you're working for.
Arrest this man!
You will come quietly.
Sure, officer, real quiet. Sorry, Buster, but I haven't got any time to waste right now.
Steve!
Oh, drop dead. I run downstairs and dug out the side door. The opposition's gag had almost worked. By the time I could have talked my way out of the frame, it had been too late to catch up with Dr. Corvell, of course. Well, now there'll be the little matter of the cops on my tail. Great. I roost behind a few assorted ash cans in an alley for a couple of hours, and then I go to the address Sari gave me. She's waiting for me in the shadows.
What? The notorious jewel thief?
Yeah. I see the news travels fast, Sari.
I believe the police are quite anxious to find
me. I don't doubt it.
So, I understand now why you wish to escape from this country.
Look, I'm trying to find Corvell. That jewel business was a frame.
Oh, too bad.
What's too bad?
You would make such a nice jewel thief. It gives you color.
Oh, color yet.
I like you, Stephen.
I think you're peachy, too. Now let's get going, huh?
Oh, very well. Come on. Here is my car. We will drive as far as the border.
Okay. What happens then?
Well, when I get you across the border, one of my men will take you the rest of the way.
Hey.
Hmm? What's the matter?
A guy running across the street at us. Get going. It's Marzak.
Oh? Who is Marzak?
The guy who rigged the jewel frame on me. Hey, he's trying for the running board.
You will not get away, Mitchell.
Yes, Marzak.
No.
Oh, very neat, Steven.
Listen. Sirens. Marzak must have tipped the cops I'd be around this neck of the woods. This is just wonderful.
Oh, are you always in trouble?
Look, I'm to trouble what honey is to a bear. Now, come on, keep that gas pedal down to the floor. It's no good, Sari. 3 miles out of the city and they're still on our tail.
They are not gaining any speed.
Neither are we, Optimist. And a half a mile's not enough lead. The cops behind me, ahead of me, the border, and who knows what. Lucky Mitchell, right in the middle again.
The river is just around the bend, Stephen. Then our troubles will be over.
What do you mean? Hey! The turn!
Hang on, Stephen.
Huh? Oh. Hey, what are you stopping for? You crazy?
Get out.
Look, what's the big idea?
I see the river below the road. Huh? I place the car in first gear. And then I pull the hand throttle out a little, turn the wheel, and get out. Quick. Now, into the bushes. Now, this is fine. Now, we just wait while they go by.
Hey, pretty neat. Looks like you're an old hand at this, Sari.
Oh, it is not hard to learn.
But isn't running a car into the river sort of expensive?
It'll go on your bill.
Oh, I see.
Here they come. So, now we go across country to the border. It's only a kilometer or two.
Lead the way. Once we get across the border, how far is it to the capital?
Oh, about 30 kilometers. Just across the border, we will meet a farmer with a horse-drawn wagon. He will take you to the next village. There, a man will be waiting for you in an automobile to take you the rest of the way.
I just hope we get there in time to keep Dr. Corvell from walking into that trap at his friend's house. Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
Quiet. Somebody heading this way.
Probably the border patrol. Get down.
Yeah. I see them.
Perhaps we had better get closer together.
Yeah, I... Like I said, you seem to be an old hand at this.
Like I said, it is not hard to learn.
Hey, quiet. Here they come. Okay. I guess we can go now.
Do you really want to?
Oh, I...
Is it not much nicer here?
Much nicer, believe me, but I still have a job to do.
Oh, too bad.
Why?
Oh, I was just thinking we could run such a beautiful rat line together, Stephen.
I don't doubt it, but right now I...
Oh, very well, if you insist. The border patrol will not be back for half an hour, so plenty of time for us to slip across. Come along. The farm and his wagon, Stephen, waiting in the shadows.
Yeah, I see them.
Dimitri?
Yes, Polly.
Well, this is goodbye, Stephen. I wish you were not leaving.
I'll be back.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
I have the strangest feeling I will not be seeing you again.
That's a cheerful thing to say.
You had better hurry.
Yeah.
Wait.
Hmm?
Now go.
After that, you think you won't be seeing me again? Oh, you can count on it.
Goodbye, Steve.
Okay, Dmitri, shove off.
Get up, get up.
Hey, where's this village we're heading for, Dmitri?
Oh, 5 kilometers.
Wait, why are you turning off the road?
This is the shorter way.
Oh. Many patrols in this area?
Not for another hour or two. That will be plenty of time.
Whoa! Hey, how come we're stopping?
Very simple. We're stopping because for you, it is the end of the trip.
Look, I... Well, a machine gun.
Quite right. Now get out of the wagon.
Okay. Now I know why Sari figured she wouldn't be seeing me again. She was working with the opposition right from the start.
It's a bad time for you to be talking about the stars, Mitchell.
What do you mean?
As soon as I press this trigger, for you it will be the finish.
You're listening to Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Mitchell.
Eh?
Turn around.
Oh, in the back, huh?
In the back. And right now.
Hello, Steven.
What? Sari!
In trouble again, I see.
I sure was until you knocked off Dmitri here.
Oh, this man is not Dmitri.
What?
Oh, I thought there was something strange about his voice. Then right after you started in the wagon, I found the real Dmitri's body in the ditch. So I followed.
Well, you just got elected the girl I'd most like to have following me.
Ah, thank you, darling.
So, what happens now?
Well, I seem to remember that
I mean, how do I go about getting to the capital?
Business, always business.
All right.
I think I better take charge of you myself the rest of the way. Come along, we will go into the village and get the car.
Hey, look, where is this car anyway?
In the garage, just a few doors farther.
Good. I've got no desire to be wandering around these streets any more than I can help. Marzak's boys might spot me.
Steven, wait.
What?
Some men in front of the garage.
Quick, into the alley.
Did they see us?
I don't think so. Who are they?
I don't know.
That's the garage where you keep the car, huh?
Yes.
They must have gotten tipped somehow. Great. What do we do now? It's too far to walk to the Capitol.
Oh, Steven, look. They have started this way.
Must have seen us. Come on, down the alley.
Wait, Steven, stop.
Stop. Are you kidding?
That door. An empty warehouse.
Okay. Hurry it up. Brother, dark in here.
We should be safe here.
Yeah. But it's not getting us any closer to Dr. Corbell.
Steve.
Yeah. Steps outside in the alley. Quiet.
They have passed by.
Yeah. Hey. If they're away from the garage, maybe we can get to the car after all. Wait a minute.
What?
Listen.
One of them is coming back.
Just one of them. Good. Stay down behind the crate. Now!
Steve, he must not call out.
He can't call all the stranglehold on him. A little more. A little more. There.
Speaking of being an old hand at this sort of thing.
Look, his buddies will be back looking for him any minute. We gotta hurry.
All right, go around to the back of the warehouse. I will get the car and pick you up there. Hop in, Stephen.
Okay. You sure didn't waste any time.
No, of course not. We must get the business over with fast, no?
Well...
Steven, I have good news for you.
I could use some right now. What is it?
I learned from my man in the garage this Dr. Corbell was delayed getting across the border. He is now less than an hour ahead of us and he's riding in a truck.
Think we can overtake him before he gets to the city?
It will be fun trying, Steven.
Hey, there's a car coming up at us fast.
Oh, I see it.
It's Marzak. Brother, what a tough guy to shake. Watch out. Watch out. He's pulling alongside.
This is for you, Mitchell.
Get down, Sari.
Let us make Marzak get down instead.
Hey.
Just giving him a friendly little nudge.
Oh, brother, right into the ditch. A friendly little nudge yet. Remind me never to get you mad at me. Now, let's see if we can catch up with that truck. Sari jams the throttle to the floor and holds it there. The minutes tick off. This is the last lap of the race and the lap that pays off. Up ahead of us somewhere, Dr. Corvell in the truck riding innocently into a death trap, and Sari and I in the car trying to catch up with him before the trap is sprung. But at least we've whittled down the opposition. Marzak's out of commission. Also the fake wagon driver who tried to machine gun me. That should leave just the friend whose house Dr. Corvell is heading for. Finally, we get to the outskirts of the city. Then Sari points up ahead.
There is the truck, Stephen.
Yeah. You sure that's the one Dr. Corvell's riding in?
Yes, I recognize it. It is my truck.
Wait a minute. How about the driver?
Oh, he's one of my men. He can be trusted.
Okay. As soon as we get up to the truck, pull alongside it and tell the driver
Stephen,
to...
Stephen, look. Look, coming out of the side street.
Huh? A hay wagon.
Oh, it has stopped in the center of the road.
Oh, brother, the other team's throwing everything at us but the water boy.
I think I can get around it.
Hey, now look. Don't try to nudge that hay wagon into the ditch.
No, we will turn here.
Oh, brother, another inch and we'd have lined up with the rest of those tomatoes on that vegetable
no,
stand.
No, down the alley.
Hey, watch out, that car.
Are you still with me?
Yep, I got enough feathers on me to pass for Sitting Bull.
There, we should be around the hay wagon. Now we will turn back onto the road and catch the truck.
Hey. The truck's nowhere in sight.
Oh, but it could not have gotten far.
Oh, great, to get this close and then...
There, look. There it goes, down the side street.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only a block ahead of us now.
Wait, it's stopping in front of that house up ahead. Dr. Gravel's getting out.
Oh, he's going up the stairs. Stephen, we are too late.
If I don't catch him now, this race is going to turn into a dead heat. Jam on the brakes. Dr. Gravel! Dr. Gravel, wait!
Who are you?
Steve Mitchell, government agent from the States. Get away from that door.
No, this is a trick. Let go of me.
Now, look.
My friend Miklos is inside. Let go.
Your friend Miklos has a bullet for you.
Take your hands off me.
Get down.
Miklos!
I've got him. Oh, boy. One more second would have been too many. I hope I never have to cut it that close again.
I cannot believe it. I thought Miklos was my friend. Yet all the while he was planning to betray me.
Well, it's all over now anyway. Come on, Dr. Corvell. Let's get you over to the legislature. We pile into Sari's car and head for the Capitol building. On the front steps are two men. One of them looks like an American. The other is Bisco, the guy who tried to shake Marzak for me earlier.
Mitchell?
Yeah?
Thompson from the legation. We've just about given you up.
Me too. Looks like you didn't have much luck in shaking Marzak for me, Bisco.
I tried, but he was too clever for me. So I thought the best thing to do was come back here to the Capitol.
There's been an all-night session of the legislature inside, Mitchell. The whole thing's hanging in the balance. Could go either way.
Then I had better go inside immediately.
Yeah. Good thing you weren't delayed any longer, Dr. Corvell. Might have been too late to do any good.
Dr. Corvell, as an old friend, you must allow me the honor of escorting you inside personally.
But I do
come,
not...
I will take your arm.
Very well.
I'll bet you're glad this deal's over, Mitchell.
You can say that again.
Rough go, hmm?
Well, if it'll give you a clue, I was framed for a jewel thief, shot at 3 times, and given a ride that would put any self-respecting roller coaster to shame.
Sounds like a real picnic.
Well, it's all over now, and... Hey.
What's the matter?
Funny. Dr. Corvell and Bisco walked right by the door to the assembly hall.
What?
Hey, looks like I spoke too soon, Thompson. I slipped down the stairs and around into the alley beside the building. There's a car parked by the side door. I hug the wall. A moment later, the door opens, and out comes Dr. Corvell, followed by Bisco.
Into the car, Corvell, and remember, I'm holding a gun on you in my pocket.
Well, guess Corvell's got no friends at all, Bisco, eh?
Mitchell!
Yeah, Mitchell!
Get your hands off me, I will kill you!
I've got your wrist. You pull that trigger now and you'll... What a hard guy to convince.
He shot himself.
Yeah, trying to do likewise to us.
Who is he? I have never seen him before.
That's what I figured. Come on.
When he took my arm, I could feel the gun in my side.
Didn't leave you much choice but to go with him.
Mitchell, you okay?
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Corvell. Better get in the assembly hall.
Yes. I... Thank you, Mitchell. Thank you.
I hope he's in time.
Come on!
Hey, listen. I guess that's your answer, Thompson.
Yeah, I guess it is, all right. Well, I suppose you'll be wanting to get back right away, Mitchell. I can get you a plane reservation.
Well, as a matter of fact, Thompson, I already have my transportation all lined up.
Oh? Oh, you mean over there in the car?
Yeah.
Ah, I see your point.
Oh, no, you misunderstand.
Are you sure?
Nope, I'm just thinking of my own safety.
Safety? Look, air travel's pretty safe these days.
That's not what I mean. I've already seen what she does to guys she gets mad at. After all, you can't blame a guy for thinking of his own neck, can you?
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian Jondo, the music by Robert Armbruster, and is produced and directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this same time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another Dangerous Assignment.
From 1950, there's Dangerous Assignment, when a friend is not a friend. In a moment, we'll continue with The Mystery Playhouse and Lady in the Morgue as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Thank you, Dave, and welcome back to Yesteryear. The Mystery Theater first aired in September of 1943 and continued until June 1951. It starred guest host Peter Lorre, Don Wilson as the announcer, and John Gibson as Detective O'Malley. On this edition of Mystery Playhouse, we present Lady in the Morgue. Two bumbling detectives are hired to identify a woman's body in the morgue, and the trail leads to music and peroxide. From May of 1945, here's The Mystery Playhouse and Lady in the Morgue on Yesteryear.
Creeps, this is Peter Lorre, here again to welcome you to the Mystery Playhouse. Tonight we bring you a story by Jonathan Latimer called Lady in the Morgue. It offers Detectives Crane and O'Malley the delightful problem of solving three murders and interviewing a lovely brunette, a lady who is mysteriously related to the unsolved crimes. Come with me to the morgue for the beginning of our little story, huh? Oh, don't let these stiffs bother you. Their troubles are over. But for those two detectives over there, the murders are just beginning. Come down these steps, right this way. Come.
I'm going nuts hanging around here.
Aw, stop squawking, O'Malley.
3 days just sitting in the morgue. I'm beginning to feel like a stiff myself.
Look, I don't like it any better than you do, O'Malley, but we're hired as private detectives to sit here. And we're going to sit here until somebody identifies the dame's body.
Okay. How do you know Alice Ross isn't Alice Ross?
Why don't you stop being a jerk? That name's a phony.
You know, Crane, the whole thing seems phony to me.
What?
Who is this rich New York guy, Cortland? He hires us by a telegram. We've never seen him. And why is he so interested in this little blonde who commits suicide?
Look, I don't think it's going to do any good, but I'm going to tell you for the last time. He thinks it's his sister, Catherine Cortland. She ran away from home a couple of years ago, chasing after some musician. Hey, that's the desk bell. Looks like the morgue's got a customer. Leave him and the attendant ought to answer it. Where is he anyhow?
Down in the vaults with the stiffs.
Well, then maybe we better answer it, O'Malley. Might be somebody to claim the body. Looking for someone, mister?
For a couple of private detectives, Crane and O'Malley.
Oh, I'm Crane. And that character over there is O'Malley.
Well, my name's Cortland. I sent you that wire.
Oh, come right in. Glad to meet you.
Me too.
Delayed in New York. Expected to be here yesterday. What about the girl?
No information yet, Mr. Cortland. And if you think she might be your sister Catherine, why, you can identify yourself.
Why, yes. Where?
This way, Mr. Cullen.
Thanks.
The body's down in a vault. Lieberman, the morgue attendant, you see, he's down there.
I'll wait here for you, Crane. I can't stand looking at that girl again.
Come on. Stick with the client.
Oh, okay. Watch your foot, and the stairs are slippery. Full.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Now, what makes you think this Alice Ross girl might be your sister, Mr. Cortland?
Well, just what I read in the New York papers, that's all. Blonde girl, blue eyes, suicide. Also, my sister Catherine wrote us about 2 months ago that she was finished with her old life. She ran away from home with the musician 2 years ago. And...
The body's in here.
Oh.
Lieberman! Hey, Lieberman, where are you? I thought you said Lieberman was down here, O'Malley.
Yeah, I saw him go down about 20 minutes ago.
Come on, Mr. Cortland. The body's on tray number 27.
Oh, yes. It's 4, 10, 14...
17, 25, 27.
You pull out the tray. I don't like things like this.
Oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. She's dead. All you gotta do is grab the handle and... Go ahead, O'Malley. You pull it out.
Oh, all right.
Well, that's a man's body. A man, not a woman.
Yeah, she's certain. You know?
What? Hey, it's Lieberman, the morgue attendant. Murder.
Murder in the morgue?
It's murder, all right. It's head smashed.
But where's the girl's body?
Yeah, Mr. Cortlin, this is a job for the police.
I don't give two hoots about your private detective credentials, Crane.
But, Lieutenant...
Not yours either, O'Malley. Now, look, a man was murdered in the morgue today and a woman's body was stolen. And you and O'Malley and this fellow Cortland were the only ones who could have done it.
Why don't you stop acting like a movie, Captain Lieutenant Grady?
What?
Think it through. Cortland is my client. He hired O'Malley and me to learn if the girl is his sister.
Right, I sent Crane a wire from New York.
All right, skip the details.
Oh, use your head, Lieutenant Grady. You're forgetting a couple of things.
Huh?
You remember that Lieberman, the morgue attendant, had a handful of red hair in his hand. Have O'Malley and Cortland got red hair? Have I?
Huh? You know darn well you have.
And we also know that somebody held Lieberman from in front while someone else slugged him from behind. Otherwise, why would Lieberman's wrist be torn and bloody?
Okay.
Lieberman had the hair in his left hand. Now, if I were holding your wrists, I'd be holding your left wrist with my right hand. Wouldn't I?
I'd be holding
your weaker hand with my strongest.
All right. Now, what are you trying to prove?
We're trying to prove...
One at a time, O'Malley.
Okay, go ahead, Crane.
Thank you, Professor. We're trying to prove that whoever held Lieberman's hands was red-headed and left-handed.
And none of us are left-handed
all
or red-headed.
All right, Mr. Cortland, pipe down. Crane, go on from there.
Lieutenant, we're going to find that missing body for you.
All right, Crane. But if you're getting away with something new and something right now... It's only temporary.
All right. Come on, O'Malley.
And look, don't forget, Crane. One false step, and I'll pin the whole thing on you. But permanently.
You shouldn't have slammed the door, Crane. You'll make him mad.
Well, what happens now?
You're going back to your hotel, Mr. Cortland, and wait there till you hear from me. O'Malley and I got to pay a visit to the apartment where the missing body hanged herself. O'Malley, I thought I told you to stick out in the hall and keep your eyes peeled.
Sure, Crane, but I'm getting nervous. Found anything yet?
Nope. One funny thing, though. Alice Ross left a lot of brand new dresses here in this closet. Look, never been worn, but not a pair of shoes in the place.
Yeah, that don't make sense, Crane.
You're telling me. O'Malley, take a look at this bathroom door. According to the papers, this is where Alice Ross hanged herself. Draped the cord over it.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, let's see now. According to the papers, she came out of the bathtub and hanged herself while she was still wet. The police found a puddle of water on the floor.
That's nuts, Crane. Why would anybody take a bath if they were going to commit suicide? Unless they wanted to hang themselves up to dry.
Would anyone hang herself while she was still wet?
Oh, I think she'd dry herself first. Don't make sense.
It'd make good sense, O'Malley, if she didn't commit suicide. Yeah. It'd make better sense if she was murdered.
Yeah. Murdered?
She was murdered first. Then the murderer hung her body up with a cord. O'Malley, get back in the hall and keep a lookout.
Sometimes I wonder what you'd do without me, Crane. Sometimes I...
Now, what's the matter?
It's Grady and a bunch of cops. Let's get out of here quick.
Yeah, but where? It's 3 floors to the ground.
How about this window?
Great. Hey, there's a ledge.
What?
You go one way, I'll go the other.
Come on, open up. We know you're in there. Open up.
If I can hide in this room until... My toe!
Get out of here! Get out of here!
You hear me? Shut up. Shut up. Now listen. Listen, I don't want to hurt you and I don't want to rob you. And I'll turn you loose if you promise not to make a sound. Now remember, if you make a sound, you're going to get hurt. Is that clear? Okay.
You already hurt me. You hurt my mouth. What are you doing in my bathroom? What do you want anyway?
Now listen, honey, I didn't want to duck through your bathroom window. It was just convenient, that's all.
Well, get out.
When I'm ready. Hey, nice apartment you got here. Mind if I look around a bit?
If you don't get out of here, I'll phone the police.
You don't have to phone, sister. They're right next door.
What?
Yeah. Did you know the girl next door, the one who hanged herself? Alice Ross?
What's that to you? And keep out of my clothes closet.
Now listen, baby. You're a beautiful hunk of flesh, and I'd hate to get rough with you. But I like answers to questions when I ask them. Now let's begin again. What's your name?
Udoni. That's my name. Mrs. Sam Udoni.
Ah, that's better. How about the girl next door?
I don't know anything about her.
Don't lie to me.
I'm not lying.
Maybe so, but this clothes closet is very interesting. Very.
Why, you know...
Watch it, baby. Now, tell me this. Why have you got 2 different sizes of shoes there in the shoe closet? Oh, and dresses. And 2 different sizes. 2 complete wardrobes.
It's very simple. Some of them belong to my roommate. She's a blonde. She dresses different from me.
But you just said your name was Mrs. Udoni, Mrs. Sam Udoni.
My husband's a musician. He travels with bands. He's away all the time.
Yeah.
What are you asking me all these questions?
Your husband forgot to take his trumpet.
Why, you...
Now, don't get sore. I'm getting out. I just heard the cops next door go down the hall. I'm, kind of sorry we met this way. You are a beautiful doll.
Don't be insulting.
I always like long black hair, the kind that comes out of a bottle.
Oh.
And don't be surprised if Papa comes back sometime.
Get out. Get out, do you hear? Get out before I kill you!
Well, that's what it all adds up to, Mr. Cortland. Alice Ross was murdered. And her body, obviously, was stolen from the morgue to cover up that murder. And if this girl was murdered, and she turns out to be your sister...
My sister is alive, Crane. I've just found out.
What? Mr. Cortland.
Oh, you heard from your sister?
Yes, she's alive. So, as she's obviously not the dead Alice Ross, I'd like you both to drop the case.
Well, I'd like to do that, Mr. Cortland. I'd like to very much, but one small difficulty. You see, Lieberman, the morgue attendant, was murdered. And I'm still kind of a suspect, and so is O'Malley, and so are you.
Well, right.
Right. And the only way we can clear ourselves is to break the case ourselves.
Right.
Right. Besides, I think I know who helped to kill Lieberman and snatch the girl's body.
You do? Who?
An undertaker. A left-handed, red-headed undertaker.
That's ridiculous.
No, now, wait a minute, Mr. Cortland. Sometimes Crane gets brainstorms.
Figure it out, Mr. Cortland. The only way anyone could get into the morgue and carry the body away is through the delivery entrance. That means only an undertaker could get in there without a lot of questions.
What'd I tell you, Mr. Cortland? A brainstorm.
Right.
Right. Oh, this is all nonsense. Complete and utter nonsense.
Maybe so, but just to prove that it isn't, O'Malley's going out right now and find that undertaker.
Right.
Me? Where am I going to find him?
You'll find him easy, O'Malley.
Sure. I'll find him easy?
Well, if this is the only way we can clear ourselves, as you say, why, I ought to help find this undertaker.
Fine, Mr. Cortland. Now, let O'Malley cover one side of town and you cover the other. We'll meet here in 4 hours.
And what about you, Crane? What are you going to be doing?
Me? Didn't I tell you? I got a date with a gorgeous brunette. Hello, Mrs. Udoni. I told you I'd be back.
You.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I came to hear the hot music and be near you.
You've got a nerve after what happened today.
Hey, that's a solid horn your husband blows in that next room there.
Yeah, what makes you think he's my husband?
You said your husband was a musician, and I saw a trumpet here this morning.
Well, you see too much. What do you want, anyway?
How does a wife of a musician feel when another woman starts following him around the country?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Never heard of Catherine Cortman, huh?
She never meant anything to Sam.
She's been following him around for several years. Must have got someplace with him in that time.
Look, you better get out of here. My husband's coming in here.
Good. I want to see him.
I told him about you butting in here. I'll kill you.
Who is this guy, baby?
This is him, Sam.
You're looking for trouble, mister.
I like trouble.
What do you want with us?
I want Catherine Cortland, or I want a body.
What are you talking about?
Oh, don't be coy, you dony. I know Catherine Cortland left New York several years ago to follow you here.
What about it? Sure, she followed me here. Does that make me responsible for her? I haven't seen her for months.
And who was that living in the apartment next door to you?
How should I know? A girl commits suicide in the apartment next door, and right away I'm a suspect. Get out of here.
Okay, you dony. Just one thing. You see this nice, shiny badge? The body of the blonde who was murdered in the apartment next to yours.
Apartment? Murdered? What are you... The paper said that...
Sure, the paper said suicide, but she was murdered, you dirty. Murdered. And her body will be in a city morgue in 4 hours, and I want you to come and take a look at it.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
It's just like you said, Crane. There was a left-handed, red-headed undertaker. Only there isn't any more.
What do you mean?
Yeah. I went to his place, rang the bell. No answer. I went in, and there he was, murdered.
What? Murdered?
Yep. Stuffed in one of his own coffins, a knife right through his heart. Police hadn't even been there yet.
Well, this is incredible.
Well, didn't you look around, O'Malley?
I'm no dope.
No?
I looked at his books. And I found out that a girl named Alice Hughes was buried today, Forest Tree Cemetery.
That's our blonde, your wonderful O'Malley. I love you.
Ah, it was simple.
Now, we got to move fast. Get out to the Forest Tree Cemetery, get that body, and return it to the morgue.
How about me?
You? You come along too, Cortland. Let's go. All right, O'Malley. Lift her up. Put her on the table. Easy now.
There. Now can I go?
Stick around. I got a job for you.
You certainly have a genius for the fantastic, Crane. Digging this body out of its grave, sneaking it in here in the morgue.
I only do what's necessary, Cortland. Now look, are you sure this girl isn't your sister?
Absolutely.
Well, it's the same body that was swiped from the morgue and she was murdered.
Murdered?
Furthermore... Whoever killed this girl knows I've located the body and returned it here to the morgue.
So what, Crane?
The killer's going to try to steal the body again. And you, Mr. Cortland and O'Malley, are going to catch him. Red-handed.
Me?
You.
But, Crane, how can you be sure?
I made sure. Now, listen. Here's what we're going to do. We leave the body here, on this table, with a sheet over it. Then you two get under the sheets on these other tables.
But those are tables they perform autopsies on.
Right. And the murderer, when he comes in, will never suspect that you're under those sheets.
All right, Crane. I'm game.
I'm leaving you two here alone. I'll beat it out and get Lieutenant Grady. Oh, I ought to warn you. No one knows you're down here in the vaults. Just you two. But don't worry. The killer will be here. Oh, good luck, boys.
Just... us two and the killer, Mr. Cortland.
I'm not afraid.
Let's get under the sheets and I'll turn out the light. Mr. Cortland, will you do me a small favor?
Why, certainly, O'Malley. What is it?
Every now and then, reach over and pinch me.
That will be a pleasure. Why?
Every time I get under a sheet, I go to sleep.
You don't mean to say you could go to sleep in a morgue, waiting for a murderer? Why, that's ridiculous.
My mind agrees with you, but when my body feels a sheet, it goes to sleep. In fact, it's going now.
O'Malley.
Hmm?
Did you hear that?
What?
I swear the door opened and closed.
Shh. Listen. Footsteps.
Oh. Ooh. Yeah. Keep the sheet over your face.
Hey! Let go of me! Let go!
Hey,
Crane! I've got him! I got him! Crane! I've got him! Turn on the lights!
All right. All right, you. Come on. I got you covered. Now, come on, get up off the floor. Well, thanks, O'Malley. I knew I could depend on you.
Right. Hey, this guy is Cortland.
Now, you tricked me, Crane. You were waiting at the end of the hall all the time.
And I suppose you didn't try to trick O'Malley and murder him in a bargain.
Yeah, but I don't get it. Did Cortland kill Lieberman? Did he steal the body?
Not so fast, O'Malley. Go ahead, go to the telephone and tell Lieutenant Grady to hurry over here to the city morgue. If he wants Lieberman's killer, I'll wait here. I'm still expecting Sam Udoni to show up and identify the girl's body. Oh, O'Malley.
Huh?
Another thing. Get me a bucket full of peroxide.
A bucket full... Peroxide?
Peroxide. I'll need it.
What's this all about, Crane? And say, who are all these people?
Well, O'Malley, you know, and this is Sam Udoni and Mrs. Udoni, and this is my client, Mr. Cortland.
Your client? Then why you got him handcuffed?
Well, it ain't merely because he didn't pay his bill.
Now, no cracks! Crane, O'Malley told me on the phone that this blonde dame, Alice Ross, didn't commit suicide but was murdered. What about that?
Well, that's right, murdered. By this man right here.
But look, Crane, Cortland couldn't
Who
have...
said anything about Cortland? I said this man right here, meaning Sam Udoni.
That's a lie. You can't prove that.
Shut up.
Now, Crane, you mean that Udoni committed all those murders?
No, my husband was with me when they were committed. And what reason would he have to kill this Alice Ross? Why, he didn't even know her.
How about that, Crane?
Well, Udoni ought to have known Alice Ross. He killed her because she wouldn't give him a divorce. Alice Ross was actually Mrs. Udoni.
How could she be? I am Mrs. Udoni.
Let me out of here.
Grab him, O'Malley.
Let me go.
Cut it out, Udoni. It won't do you any good.
It's better.
Don't talk, Sam. They can't prove anything.
Be quiet, you. By heavens, this is all beginning to make sense. That's why Udoni stole the body of his wife. So that he could pass off this woman here as Mrs. Udoni.
Right, Lieutenant.
Sure, I get it.
And now for the proof, O'Malley. O'Malley, hand me that bucket full of peroxide.
Here you are, Crane.
Hey, now, wait a minute, Crane. Wait a minute before you start these shenanigans. If Alice Ross was actually Mrs. Udoni, who's this dame here?
Well, that's simple. She's Catherine Cortland.
What?
You're crazy. Catherine Cortland was a blonde.
Wait a minute. She's no blonde, Crane.
Oh, no? Just watch. Watch her hair, Lieutenant. Just watch her hair.
Yeah. Say, the black is running out.
The dye, you mean. You better take her someplace where she can clean up, O'Malley.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Where does this guy Cortland fit in?
I'm afraid he was merely an unhappy accomplice. But go easy on him. He's a good guy.
Good guy. He tried to stab me.
Yeah, but he was dragged into this whole thing to protect his sister. And she was dragged in by Sam Udoni. He's the real louse.
Look, Crane, I'm not making any alibis, but I wish you'd answer me just one question.
Go ahead, shoot, Cortland.
How did you know my sister had dyed her hair?
Well... in your sister's apartment, I found a bottle of black hair dye and a bottle of peroxide in the bathroom. But what finally convinced me was the real Mrs. Udoni.
What do you mean?
You see, hair grows after death. And if you'll take a look at the dead girl's body, you'll see the roots of her blonde hair are all black.
Crane, all I can say, you make my hair stand on end.
That was Lady in a Morgue by Jonathan Latimer. Oh, yes, yes, we were going to have a guest ghost on tonight's broadcast. Oh, but poor fellow, he was taken gravely ill. The doctors have given up all hope. He's going to live. By the way, if you have any pet vampires you'd like to hear about on these programs, just drop me a line. Just give the letter to your favorite witch with instructions to take her broomstick and knock on the door of the Mystery Playhouse. Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Now it's time to close the doors before all these bats fly away. This is Peter Lorre saying good night. Sleep tight.
From May 1945, there's Mystery Playhouse and Lady in the Morgue with guest host Peter Lorre. That's all we have time for on this edition of Yesteryear. We invite you to join us again next week at this time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Do-de-o, do-de-o, do. Radio.